Senate Judiciary Committee is called to order. It is 3:40, and we do have a quorum to conduct business consisting of myself, Senator Lisa McGuire, my vice chairman, Senator John Coghill, Senator Peter Michicki, Senator Mia Costello, and Senator Bill Wilikowski. And so we do have our full committee here. We have one item on the agenda today in the first special session of the year. The date is May 25th. The bill is House Bill 200, and just to refresh everyone's memory, this bill regards the adoption of a child in state custody. The Senate heard Senate Bill 112 in this committee a couple of times and moved that bill out to the floor. It was on the floor and then moved back to Senate rules based on a couple of questions people had about provisions in the bill. It was sort of late at the end of the year. Wasn't a chance to answer that. In the meantime, the House bill came over and was referred to this committee. This bill has been placed on the special session called by the governor of the state of Alaska. Here to explain the changes are Christy Lawson, the director of the Office of Children's Services, and Katie LeBrand with the Department of Law. We also have Nancy Mead with the court and some people online for public testimony. So without further ado, if we could have Christy come forward and tell us about the bill before us. And do we need to adopt a committee substitute on this? I think it's just exactly as it was referred. Okay, thank you, Madam Secretary. Okay, and so the version before us is H dot A, capital A. Welcome.
Hello, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Christy Lawton. I'm the director of the Office of Children's Services. Thank you for scheduling today to hear House Bill 200. We're very eager to see this bill move through, and I appreciate the time to review this. Can we start over?
No, it's okay.
So the changes in the House version that you have before you are minor but significant in lieu of some of the conversations we had with Senate members after the bill went to the Senate floor after Judiciary. As you recall, Senate Bill 112 and the companion House Bill 200, the original intent of the bills was really to deal with a couple of situations, one that was created by some U.S. Supreme Court case decision, as well as an Alaska Supreme Court case, which basically added a new requirement in cases that are covered under the Indian Child Welfare Act that changed the way that relatives or those that are able to seek adoption of a Native child had to be recognized by the courts. Previously, they could simply come to us and say, I'm interested in placement, I'm interested in adoption. We would begin our procedures to evaluate them, assess them, and contemplate them for immediate placement. With the legal decisions that happened, the law then changed to say that in order for them to be considered for adoption, they had to first file a formal petition to adopt. And that was then also required to have the placement preferences for adoption that are mapped out under the Indian Child Welfare Act recognized and preserved for the record. So that would be something that we would be asking those families to do potentially right at the beginning of a case, just so that when and if we got to the point that adoption was needed because reunification failed, which is always our goal, that if they hadn't filed that formal petition to adopt to recognize those placement preferences under ICWA, the court wouldn't have to recognize them, meaning anybody outside the child's family could give equal priority. So this bill, which really came at some suggestion from the Alaska Supreme Court in their decision in the Tanunat case in Alaska, suggested that that we consider the use of a proxy in lieu of the formal petition. So this bill really provided that consideration that we have something less formal than a written petition for adoption that really is not necessary at the beginning of the case, but that all people would eventually have to file if they became the adoptive identified parent. So the original version really said that the proxy provision was just applicable to those that qualified under the Indian Child Welfare Act, because that was really who the law impacted. It didn't say that non-Native people had to file a formal petition to adopt to be considered to adopt their relative children. With the House version, because of the concerns we heard about the proxy provision and feeling like there needed to be a parallel process for non-Native families to also give them equal consideration and opportunity to the court to be recognized, The proxy provision has been expanded with an amendment on the House side. So the proxy is really something now that all family members can use. And so if they're interested in the immediate and permanent placement of their relative child, all they have to do is let us know. They can do that via email, via fax. They can stand up in court at a meeting. And that will then begin a process by which we will formally notify the parties, we'll assess them, and the court will recognize them as relatives, and that will be preserved on the record. It really is going to create more transparency, and it's going to bring the attention of these relatives to all of the legal parties' immediate attention in a far faster and more streamlined version than we do currently right now. So we think it's a good thing for all Alaskans, and it's going to provide increased access and, you know, visibility and reduce confusion for relatives. It will also help us to be contemplating relatives that are interested in not just temporary placement, but the key here is they have to be willing to say immediate placement, because our goal is if we're going to place a child with a relative, we prefer to place with a relative that knows that they might be able to commit long term, so that a child, if they can't go home, doesn't have to be bounced between relative to relative. So that really is going to initiate those conversations very early on, which is a good thing. The other thing that both versions of the bill do, and just to remind you that House Bill 200 still does, which is very important to us, it creates this one judge, one family model, which is new to Alaska and I think really innovative. It's going to reduce the need for multiple court hearings involving a child in state custody. Currently, a child that's their cases, when they're in foster care, they're heard in a child in need of aid proceeding, typically with one judge, but if that case ends up having to go to a guardianship or adoption, or if the parents had a pre-existing civil custody matter before we got involved, or one parent initiates a civil custody matter while we're involved, those all could happen with different judges in different courts, which really is just a lot of repetition. It means a lot of hearings that the parties have to go to, and oftentimes those multiple proceedings slow down the child need of aid case. So this one judge, one court model will basically say that the judge hearing the child need of aid case will now be the judge to make decisions regarding adoption, guardianship, and civil custody proceedings. So it will create a lot of efficiencies for the legal parties, and more importantly, we think it will help to ensure more timely achievement of permanency for children in foster care, whether that's returning home to their parents or if it's going to adoption or guardianship. So that's one of the really exciting features of that bill. And we worked with the Public Defender's Agency, Department of Law, Office of Public Advocacy, the court system, as well as our partners in the tribal community in creating this bill that everybody's been very supportive of.
Excellent. I really appreciate that. On the record, do you care to speak to any of the work or conversations that happened between members of the Senate that had some concerns, and how you worked through that process with them, just so that that's on the record?
Sure, Senator McGuire. I think some of the concerns we heard were that the proxy provision seemed like something that all Alaskans should be able to benefit from, if it helped to reduce barriers and make the process easier for relatives to access. It was a sense of fairness, I think, to say one group shouldn't benefit that another group can't benefit from. Okay. So this really sort of takes away that and balances that out. I think a couple of other concerns that we heard really sort of were beyond this bill, that there really wasn't a space in this particular bill, given how narrow it was, to deal with it, related to the Indian Child Welfare Act and when there are late-stage competing people wanting to adopt a child. Sometimes those can end very painfully when the Indian Child Welfare Act is applied. We think this bill will help reduce the chances of those late-stage competing adoption petitions from being battled out, because this is really going to require and will have the court recognizing these relatives much early on, and really have relatives have to step up and say, I'm not only willing to accept the child temporarily, but I would accept the child permanently. So they don't get to wait to say, well, call me in a year if reunification fails, and then I'll think about if I'm willing to adopt. They have to be contemplating that now. Okay. So that children don't get attached to foster parents, and then family members at the last minute say, well, I don't want the child to leave our family, and then it really is terrible. It's terrible for everybody when those things happen. So we think this will help with that.
Absolutely. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Ms. Lawton. A couple of definitions for me and for the public. Can you please define a child in need of aid? So it's so we can understand when this process might be initiated?
Through the chair, Senator Michiki. So a child in need of aid is what the legal proceedings are called whenever a child is in state custody. So in the statutory and regulatory guidelines, that's where you'll find all the court rules related to how cases should be handled. And it really just means a child that's under the court's jurisdiction. The state has legal responsibility for the child, either placement and or supervision.
Senator Michiki.
Madam Chair, and then what is the scope of the definition of a relative? How far does that go through the family line while the state still recognizes a potential adopting parent or parents?
Through the chair, Senator Michiki, typically in most of our cases we see relatives out to the fifth degree. So this is second cousins. I mean, it's quite far in our expansion. It does, in ICWA cases, the tribe can also identify someone as a relative. That might be a slightly different definition, but by and large, in most cases, it's to the fifth degree. And if they can then establish, we also recognize kin. So those are people that may not be biologically related, but for all intents and purposes, the family recognizes that person as the auntie and they've been a part of the child's life. Those are considered fictive kin, and they're also considered.
Any further questions, members of the committee? Yes, Senator Cockhill.
First of all, I think the one provision in here about having the family court tied together in a civil manner, I think that's good. So the petition is probably the biggest question in for me, and anyway. So the petition starts when you have the petition is an issue when you have a child under state custody, if I understand correctly. True? Is it primarily that?
Through the chair, Senator Cockle, are you talking about the petition related to the adoption petition?
The adoption. When somebody wants to put a petition down for adoption, I guess we're assuming already that we're in a state custody situation, right?
Yeah, Senator Cockle, this only is contemplated for children that are in state foster care, not for all adoptions.
When you were talking, it could have been construed as those outside of the state custody mm-hmm. question. So I just wanted to make sure that got cleared up. This is going to be a specific question, and I'm sorry I didn't do my homework on this, but on page 5, when you start on section 9, except as provided in 1326 and 2523, can you tell me, and you don't have to tell me right now, just maybe I'll do some studying too, but what are the exceptions there under 1326.050 and 2523.030? I just need to... I'm sorry, that's homework I should have done before I got here, but I just happened to notice that when I sat down at the table today.
And because we're going to hold it over and move it out at the next hearing, Friday or Saturday, that could give you time. If you're not prepared to answer it on the spot, I assume Senator Cockhill would be okay with you studying that, thinking about it, and then coming back and answering on the record. Up to you.
Through the chair, Senator Cockhill, I'm probably not the best person to answer that on the fly right at the moment, but we do have Carla Erickson from Department of Law online, and I'm guessing she could easily answer that today.
We can give her a couple minutes to look it up, or we can look at it later. That is not a stickler question for me. It's just that when I was reading through it before you sat down, I honestly couldn't remember what those were. So, but to the bigger question, on the petition, the proxy, I guess I need to know a little bit of how that would work. So give me the time frame. So from the time a child is in state custody, and at that point you have a parental unification that has the potential, but there's also either an adoption or there's a guardianship potential, right? Mm-hmm. At what point in that process the judge says, okay, we're child in need of aid, parents, you're under a plan of some kind, right? And at what point does this proxy have to actually land in front of a judge?
Through the chair, Senator Cockhill, there isn't any specific required time frame that the proxy has to be used or be placed in front of the judge. Somebody could use the proxy day 2 that the child comes into foster care and puts it on the record, even though we're a long ways away from contemplating adoption, or it could be month 6. I mean, we're hopeful, and what we'll be working with our tribal partners and all of our partners on is the sooner the better, because the sooner these folks can be recognized, we can evaluate them, we can ensure the child's in the home that is the best home and the home that could potentially be long-term if reunification isn't successful. That's better for everybody, because it's going to create a lot less problems down the road. But there is no, like, they have to file it by X date,
okay,
or this is the expiration. That's not built in.
Well, then I don't feel too bad, because I looked for a time frame in and I couldn't find one. So that means that I was looking for something that wasn't there. So, and the reason I'm asking that is I think that this is going to be a very valuable tool. As you said, I can see where knowing who is interested in that child very early on is very important, even for the family, should reunification actually happen. So I think that that's probably not a bad thing to do. But what are some of the downsides of a proxy being filed? For example, does it put somebody in an awkward spot with a family member? Does it create a legal entanglement that otherwise is going to create other problems? I'm just trying to think down the road of, and you probably have thought about this more than I have legally, but once somebody puts their name forward, they have agreed that they're willing to take long-term custody. Does that create its own conflict?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, I think that for some family members, they might see it that way, but I don't think it's any different than the position family members are often put in these cases currently, mm-hmm. which is when we're asking them to sort of work on our behalf to care for the child. They have to follow our rules. We set the standard of, you know, visitation with the parent, which can place family members at odds with their relatives and, you know, feeling like they're working for the state sometimes. So I think that those dynamics already exist and people have to find a way to work through them. I think that certainly family members, some family members are very hesitant to be saying, I'll be wanting to adopt the child early on, because parents sometimes only hear, you know, the permanent part. They don't hear this is a, you know, temporary placement, and that's a long ways away. But I think these are going to be decisions that will be best for the children long term, and we'll have to negotiate that and help family members with those dynamics.
So you've instituted team decision making, and there's a couple other methodologies, but I think team decision making process, will this fit well into that process?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, I think it certainly will be in the places where we have team decision making, which is, it's not statewide, it's only in three of our large areas, but it will be complementary to what we're doing here, because those, every time we're going to, team decision making meetings are geared to every time we think about, we think we're going to potentially have to remove a child and or change a placement, which removal is changing a placement, but even if they're in foster care and we think we need to move from relative A to relative B, these are decisions that are geared to bring all of the people that are involved in the case and the family members and the parents together to really think seriously about the change we're going to make, and is it the right change, and how do we do it to reduce the trauma to the child and make it successful. So as we're contemplating decisions about moving to this relative because they're interested in the immediate permanent placement, from foster care, for example, team decision-making meetings in those cases would be employed and would be sort of be parallel to what's happening here.
Okay. And there are a couple other questions.
Absolutely.
How does a tribal court see this generally? Because I know that in Fairbanks, tribal courts have one type of organization that's probably different than what you have in Bristol Bay. But would you think this would be recognized by tribal courts as a general rule?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, there isn't anything in this bill that is applicable when it's in tribal jurisdiction, in tribal courts, okay, because the Indian Child Welfare Act doesn't apply to tribes. It only applies to state courts.
I wanted to hear that, because that's what I was thinking, that there's a different methodology, although they're the same people. I think most of the tribal courts are trying to work with the state methodologies. So I thought that was the case. I couldn't remember. But under Indian Child Welfare, I think the 25 U.S.C. 1903, an extended family is different than what we have in our statute, and all you have is a reference to it here. Maybe it would be a nice thing if you brought back what the difference between our state law extended family, because I know that the tribal has a standing that is different than a family standing. Mm-hmm. And I think we should understand that as we move forward, because that means a proxy will be different, if I understand correctly. Am I understanding that properly?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Cockhill, and we certainly could go into more detail at the next hearing, but under the Indian Child Welfare Act, when we're looking at placement preferences, it looks at relatives first, relatives to the children, then it looks at other tribal members, and or if there's no tribal members, it also can look at other tribes outside the child's tribe. So it does, it is more extended. I mean, obviously, non-native children don't belong to tribes. So there isn't that provision. Everything else is the same because for non-native children, we're always looking at relatives first and then extended and, you know, family, friends.
Right.
But there is that additional provision for native children.
Yeah. And for years, we've tried to figure out ways to dovetail as best we could with the Indian Child Welfare requirements. But one does have a tribal standing. And so we've tried to include extended family as much as we can in our law. So
bless you.
Is there a different petitioning process under Indian Child Welfare than there is under our civil law for petition for adoption?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, no, it would be the same.
All right.
And could I just make one clarification just in terms of ICWA and thinking about the placement preferences and relatives? For an ICWA case versus a non-ICWA case, when we're talking about relatives and the first priority always being to look for immediate family, extended family, the law, the Indian Child Welfare Act law, doesn't distinguish non-native versus native family members. Relatives are relatives, a relative that's native versus a relative that's non-native is still considered first preference under the Indian Child Welfare Act.
Well, that's nice to know. Thank you. Madam Chair, that would be the next question that would lead me to. We have, in my neck of the woods, blended families all over the place. Mm-hmm. So at what point is somebody considered under the ICWA law? Is it a percentage, or is it enrollment, or what is the criteria?
A child is covered under the Indian Child Welfare Act if they identify as Alaska Native American Indian. The tribe has to intervene in court, which has to demonstrate their eligibility for enrollment in a tribe. But they don't have to be enrolled to be considered, but they have to be eligible for enrollment. And my colleague at Department of Law can correct me if I got that less than precise. But
it's just an interesting nuance of law that because in my area, I've had many, many contests between families and sometimes even between tribal groups where one tribal group might have a preference over another. And it has not been fun from time to time. So I just thought I'd throw that out. Thank you.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know you had this note, and I looked up that statute, which is a single one-liner on venue for proceedings. And Senator Coghill, both of those are included in the bill, which is why I couldn't find it. It's their new sections on the exceptions.
Okay. All right. My apologies.
Well, that always throws me off when you look at the statute book and try to see where it fits in, and it wasn't there previously. But the question I have, and I don't know if you're going to the Department of Law, but we're going to get the question in our caucus, which is why some of these things sometimes get hung up, right? And it's a team sport about parental rights. And just can you comment on how parental rights change under this particular bill? I mean, in my view, they don't. This is already a child that's likely to be either temporarily under guardianship or permanently adopted. And the bill just seems to streamline that process for a child in the process. So could you explain if this bill actually changes the effects on a parent's rights to either retain their child if they're capable or not, if it changes that decision-making process?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Machicki, this bill doesn't change any of that. It doesn't change any of the timelines, any of our requirements to work with parents. Federal law outlines very specifically the efforts that we have to apply to give the parent every chance to be successfully reunited with their child. So us discussing, you know, potentially this relative coming forward and saying, I'm interested, I would be willing to be the temporary and permanent placement, doesn't change anything for the parent, because we're still required by law to give them every opportunity to work their case plan to be successfully reunited. So this doesn't expedite us moving towards a goal other than reunification any differently than we are now. And they still, through their, you know, representation in court, will have a chance to weigh in on what they think about the relatives that come forward, what their preference might be for placement. We don't necessarily take their preference as we're, you know, the answer, but certainly it's a factor in the entire decision-making process that we consider.
Thank you. One,
yeah, absolutely.
So it's kind of a fiscal note question. I didn't notice a fiscal note for the Department of Law, but it seems like in these times, and I separate the importance of this issue from the dollar amount, but in these times of a little bit of a fiscal gap, it seems like there'll be some savings. And I would think you would want to capture that in a Department of Law fiscal note. Is that, you agree with that? And is that something perhaps the chair could request?
Through the chair, Senator Maticki, Ms. Erickson from Department of Law might wish to comment. We certainly believe that this will have efficiencies in terms of saving some time, but as we worked on this bill and this some of these changes came from its, you know, transmittal last year, it was hard to quantify how we were going to say what those savings would be. And I think OCS, the public defenders, OPA, Department of Law, we all sort of had the same struggle. We think it is going to create savings, because we think, you know, not having to go to multiple court proceedings where a judge could very likely make multiple decisions within one hearing now, as opposed to having to set on different ones, is going to, you know, save time for the legal parties involved. But it was a difficult one for us to try to quantify until we sort of see the impact of how it's going to play out. So I don't know if Department of Law would like to say something further on that, maybe.
Senator Maticki, anything further?
People quantify value differently. There's the value to the child and the family, and there's also value to the state. And I would, my suggestion would be an indeterminate that sort of captures what those other departments feel would be the value in this change.
I like it, and I'll make that request. I think that's a great point. I see value in saving time in the court system with one judge. I also see value in that you're requiring parties of interest to come to the table earlier, so that the hope would be that the placement would be more likely to be permanent and enduring, as opposed to continuing to come back and having to hold hearing after hearing. Of course, there's the social impact that was just mentioned about the value to a child of being stable in one place and moving forward. I'm going to go to the Department of Law. Before I do, I'm just going to give a heads up. So you've heard some of the questions. Carla Erickson, I'm going to go to you next, and then I'm going to come to you, Nancy Mead. So I'm just giving you guys a heads up for Carla to answer the questions that have been discussed or tag on to the answers that have been given here already on the record. And then for Nancy, my questions to you are going to be a little bit broader, but to start thinking about, we've talked in Judiciary Committee before about the notion of having family courts, having judges and magistrates that specifically want to be in family court, and having, as opposed to it rolling through, and having those judges be specifically trained and to receive continuing legal education in training on what the best practices are with respect to child in need of aid cases, along with adoption. And so I want to talk a little bit about that. And then for the team approach part, I'm going to ask Nancy, but before I leave you, I wanted to ask, I love the team concept that has been put into place in my time here in the legislature. I think it's outstanding. And, you know, better, more minds together on a problem, often, you know, you reach a better result. My question is, will that same team that's evaluating the child in need of aid circumstances then take on, as we move into the consideration of adoption and permanent placement, this issue? And I guess by that I mean the vetting that goes then before the judge is asked to make the decision, whether it's a China point or whether it's a point on permanent placement, will that team their mission be expanded to include a review of these proxies and a review of the circumstances so that they, too, will have an opportunity to make a recommendation to the judge?
Senator McGuire, I believe so. We haven't really sort of started creating the revised policies on this, but the way the TDM meetings occur, you know, every time we believe that it's possible a placement change might be needed for a child, they're brought in. So in these cases, what likely would happen is, say, at the upfront, we have a requirement by law to notify all relatives about their opportunity to ask for placement. Sometimes, you know, we're lucky to get one relative to come forward. Other cases, we might get, you know, a half dozen relatives that might all come forward. And so before probably it got to the team decision-making group weighing in, likely the caseworker and our licensing folks would be going through a process of sort of vetting those people.
Okay.
Because some of them are going to be kind of immediately excluded from consideration for some obvious reasons. So it will narrow the group, and then I believe that TDMs will be employed then to say, okay, so we're considering placement, and really they're supposed to come up with a recommendation.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the court would also be weighing in on that. So there will be a mechanism by which that group will be employed. And then we also have, when it comes to making permanency decisions, we're also required to have permanency planning staffings with people that are sort of expert in looking at permanency. How that interfaces, because right now typically we're not looking at changing permanency goals until around the 9-month mark, kind of evaluating what progress has been made. So I don't think that's going to bring that group together sooner, but there's multiple ways where there's groups of people kind of coming together to contemplate those decisions. So I think they're all going to interface and blend. We're going to have to figure out kind of exactly how they're all going to, you know, work in collaboration together for sure.
Excellent. And just a little personal note, thank you for the work that you do. This is a really hard place to work in, and I mean, I think if the fiscal note ends up reflecting savings, my hope is that there's a chance you could retain some of them and direct them to your department and the men and women that are on the cases that are completely overworked. I know that, and I just can't think of a more important thing that we do at the state than catch a child before they fall through the cracks. That's their one life and the building blocks of it. So I thank you for what you do. Okay, I'm going to go to Carla Erickson with the Attorney General's Office. And Ms. Erickson, if you just put yourself on the record and any statements you'd like to make about House Bill 200 generally, and then if you wanted to touch on any of the questions by Senator Coghill and Senator Machicki, that would be great.
Absolutely. My name is Carla Erickson, and I'm the supervising attorney for the Child Protection Section of the Attorney General's Office. I think Director Lawton explained the bill quite well. I would have one clarification in the statement that she made in response to a question. It is not necessary for the tribe to intervene in order for the case to be considered under the Indian Child Welfare Act, as long as the child in question is either a member of an Indian tribe, a member of a tribe, or is eligible for membership because they are the biological child of a member of the tribe, then the Indian Child Welfare Act would apply. Just a small clarification there. As far as the savings go, I agree with Director Lawton. When we were having these discussions, it was very difficult to quantify, but I also do agree that we could end up with definitely some time savings and some efficiency savings. Very often we're involved in the probate matters as adoptions and guardianships anyway, but certainly there's a lag. There can be a lag. It's not in every case, but there can be a lag in achieving permanency because we're waiting on other courts to act, which this bill would largely eliminate. So certainly that would be of significant benefit to the families. But I am certainly happy to work with Director Lawton and the other legal parties to reevaluate whether or not there might be some additional savings that we could articulate more specifically.
Thank you. And Ms. Erickson, anything further that you'd like to add? You've already touched on the fact that the director gave a great overview, one caveat you made, on the questions that came from Senator Coghill on the exceptions and discussions by Senator Machicki about members to be included, et cetera. Is there anything that you wanted to add?
Thank you. I would add, just for clarity's sake, we've been calling this the kind of the one judge, one family notion, and that we're rolling in the adoption and guardianship proceedings and the civil custody proceedings as well, because very often we might be waiting on a civil custody arrangement outside of the China case to be finalized before we can dismiss the case. So those will also be brought into the China case. And the intent is for them to be heard by the same judge that was hearing the China case, that these are not new proceedings, but rather just an expansion of the types of orders that the child in need of aid judge would be able to issue. And I appreciate working with Nancy Mead over the past several months in order to come find a way that would work with the court system, because that's a fairly significant change in process, and I've been very appreciative of her efforts with me in finding a way that would work. That's all.
Excellent. Okay, questions for Ms. Erickson from any members of the committee?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Machicki.
I just have a general one. Young person has a child, doesn't exactly have their life together, and goes through the child goes through the adoption process to a relative. How difficult is it? People do turn their lives around if they want to reverse the process 2 or 3 years down the road when stability returns and their ability to raise a child improves. Is that something that people do, and is it a relatively simple process?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, when a child is adopted, once that adoption is finalized, the law recognizes that relationship as if that child had been born biologically to that family. And so in that instance, it is not easily undone. In fact, barring extreme and extraordinary circumstances, I can't right now recall it ever having been done after a period of the time that you're talking about. There is a period of time where challenges can be brought for reasons of fraud and things of that nature. But once the adoption is finalized and there aren't any allegations of that nature, that is a final process. On the other hand, guardianships, which is also a mechanism for achieving permanency, do have a way for a parent to come back and, once they've rehabilitated themselves, present themselves to the court and make an argument that they should be given custody back to them, full and complete custody back to them. And that is done from time to time, not very frequently, but it has happened, and certainly there is a legal mechanism by which that can happen.
Senator Machicki? Senator Cockhill?
This could be for the law or for Christy. The process at this point is legal guardianship under state custody, but what we're talking about is the Indian child welfare. But there are times when tribal courts get involved. So what is the process? Is it the same process, or if a tribal court gets involved, at what point do you turn over to the tribal court the responsibility to, say, permanency planning or adoption?
I think I'll let Ms. Erickson respond to that.
Okay. Ms. Erickson?
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Cockhill. The tribal courts, as everyone I'm sure is aware, is a separate and distinct entity from the state court in a child need of aid process. And there is a mechanism under China Rule 23 by which a parent or a tribe who has intervened can make a motion to transfer jurisdiction of the case to the tribal court. And then parties are allowed an opportunity to express their views on the matter, and should the case transfer to tribal court, then the tribal court would start making all the decisions in the case, and the state case would be dismissed in its entirety, and the state wouldn't have any more say in what goes on in the tribal court. Those motions to transfer to tribal jurisdiction can be made at any time in the case, from day one all the way up to, you know, when we might be approaching making permanent permanency decisions. So it really is dependent on the circumstances of the case.
So, and I think that's one of the reasons why the proxy thing becomes important, because we get interested parties can bring information early on, which could waylay some of the entanglements that we found ourselves in down through the years. So I wanted to hear that out loud, because I'm asking about a specific case right now, and it really comes down to notice provisions and who has standing. And I won't bring all that into this bill, but I could see the value of a proxy in a situation where people are noticing their interest early on. And if it's a tribal group, then it would be interesting. That way there's less surprises, I think. Mm-hmm. And so I think the surprises are what catch people off so much.
I love it. Well, I hope, as I've said before, I hope members like yourself continue working in this area. And as you alluded to, there were some concerns brought up by members that simply were broader than this bill. I think this area of adoption is so ripe and important for consideration by the legislature and improvement. I'd love to see Alaska get to a place where we were one of the best states as in terms of permanent placement as opposed to lower down on the list. So I hope some of the experiments or new ideas in this bill might move over into other places, and I hope we continue to improve it, you know, as we go through the years. Senator Machicki and then Senator Coghill.
You know, I
to go to the members.
One of the reasons I brought up the parental rights issues, I'm personally not concerned with that. I have adopted a child, our 20-year-old I adopted, and she was abandoned at birth, and it took a year and a half for the adoption to go through. I think we're overly lenient on particularly absentee and deadbeat parents in this state. So I always want to be on the lookout for parental rights and make sure we're not irresponsible about it. But I just think it was an important question, sort of personally, that in many cases I think we go too far. So that's probably something your department struggles with on a daily basis, on the right balance of parental rights versus what's best for a child and a parent that wants to raise that child forever.
Hugely important. And I know that has been we're an open adoption state, and that's great. But there are a lot of hoops that people say people have to go through here that it makes it difficult. And it just bothers me that Alaskans are going to other countries and other places as opposed to coming right here and adopting children that need and want a family and can live right here. And I just feel like we can make that a better connection. Senator Kocko.
So my apologies earlier. I asked you about two sections of law, and they are actually the new sections on the where the petitioner has to provide notice to all the parties.
Can you tell us that section?
And that's sections 2 and 4. And so sections 2 and 4, the new section is in the judicial district in which the petitioner resides. If the petitioner provides notice to all parties of the child need aid proceeding and no party objects, and that allows that petition, that's a proxy petition, to have a legal standing if there's no objection, the way I understand it. If there's an objection, then they have to stand aside. Is that true?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, I think what this is really intending to do is say that, so under this bill, if enacted, the adoption and guardianship proceedings happen in the child need of aid case, which might be in a different community than where the family that's adopting lives. This provision says that if the parties agree, the venue for the purposes of enacting the adoption could move to, say, the Kenai district, so that the family can be in front of a judge with all their extended family around them to have that special moment together. So that's really what that speaks to.
Right. So I was thinking it was the proxy petition, but actually it's a petition for the venue.
Yes.
Okay, got it. Sorry, I totally missed that, so my apologies.
Okay, excellent. So I'm going to go. Thank you, Director. Lawton, if you could remain here in the room, that would be excellent. I don't know what your schedule is. I'm going to go first to the two people here in the room. Mary Sadler was signed up next with the Alaska Regional Coalition. And then I'll go to Grace Sin, who's here also in the room. You can correct me if I say it wrong.
Sing.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mary Sadler. I'm a professional lobbyist, and the client I'm representing today is the Alaska Regional Coalition. It's a coalition that has 5 regional corporations in it, representing 100 tribes. The coalition, this has been one of the bills that they've been focused on all session. It's been a priority piece of legislation for the coalition. And I'm very hopeful that this will be passed in the special session. I'm also very thankful to the administration, not only for putting it forward, but for putting it on the agenda for the special session. This really will impact a lot of children and a lot of families. So we're very, very hopeful and optimistic that it will pass.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, thank you. We appreciate your work. Okay, and next I'll go to Grace. Put your name on the record. Welcome.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Grace Singh, and I'm here representing Central Council of Tlingit Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. Thank you for allowing us to speak today. In the current system, China proceedings and adoption proceedings are held separate in separate courtrooms with separate judges and often separate court-appointed attorneys. After parental rights are relinquished or terminated within the China case, the child is free to be adopted, and adoption petition may be filed, even when the underlying China case is still proceeding. This bill allows family members, extended family, or even the child's tribe to initiate adoption proceedings in the China case. And it gives extended family members an opportunity to make a formal request for adoption in a China proceeding. Many Alaska family members in rural communities lack resources and access to initiate a formal adoption proceeding. Internet access is often unavailable or painfully slow. The judicial districts in rural Alaska are massive, covering huge chunks of the Alaskan landscape. Few communities have superior courts where adoption paperwork can be filed. In addition, close family members will often delay a request for adoption because they support the family's reunification goals. If reunification fails, the court used this delay against relatives, asking, why didn't the family speak out earlier and request an adoption? Further, young parents sometimes migrate to urban centers while grandparents and relatives remain in the village or rural areas. Children are placed in homes near to these urban areas to facilitate visits and reunification with the parents. In all these situations, the current procedures punish relatives for not demanding immediate placement or adoption to fail to account for the barriers such as language, culture, and economics. Allowing adoptions to be initiated in China proceedings via the proxy method makes the process more realistic and understandable. It is our hope that this bill will increase the number of Alaskan children to reach permanency with their family, culture, and traditions. Thank you so much for all of your questions. I think it really clears a lot of stuff up when it comes to in-state placement. That's always a huge priority. I appreciated the question on family definitions and tribal court placements. Central Council has one of the only agreements with OCS for 4E placements, and that was a very historic accomplishment that we just signed, working very closely with Ms. Lawton and Ms. Erickson. And so I would just like to point out that this isn't a rural versus urban issue. We all want protected children. We all want healthy children and prosperous communities.
Yes.
So thank you.
Excellent. Questions for Grace? Thank you, Ms. Singh. Okay, next I'm going to go to Nicole Borromeo with the Alaska Federation of Natives in Anchorage.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chairman McGuire and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. For those of you that don't know me in the room, my name is Nicole Borromeo, and I serve as Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Alaska Federation of Natives. I do know all of you sitting there in the committee room, and thank you very much for your time and attention to this very important matter. As you know, AFN strongly supports HB 200. We have been highly involved in this issue since the very beginning of the process, which started with Tununak and that legislation and that litigation, excuse me. We've talked extensively about the reasons that AFN supports this bill, and I just want to reiterate the top three. It removes the barriers, first of all, that prevent Alaska Native families from adopting Native children in state custody by better defining what a proxy in lieu of a formal petition for adoption is. This is required to reconcile baby girl Veronica with Tununak too. Second, it consolidates adoptions, guardianships, and civil child custody proceedings into a single court matter, which, as Director Lawton has previously testified to will save the state incredible resources and implement a one-judge, one-child model that will also help streamline our child welfare system. And finally, it does further the state's compliance with the Indian Child Welfare Act, which has been challenging at times. This is a good bill. This is a solid bill. This is a bill that the Alaska Native community supports, that we have helped get to this place working in close partnership with the state. And we hope that you would not hold it over today, but indeed pass it out of committee and immediately get it scheduled for a vote on the Senate floor. Thank you very much, and I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you so much, Nicole. We really appreciate all your hard work and patience with our process. And we will definitely get the bill out. And the only reason we're not getting it out today, as I said on the record, was not a reflection of the content, but just that as a policy in the committee, we hold a bill that we're hearing for the first time for one day, so members get a chance just to be sure they don't have further questions or amendments, and to get feedback from their constituents. So just so you know. So Senator Costello.
Thank you, Nicole. This is Mia, and I just wanted to say that I want to recognize your commitment and dedication to this bill, and I know that you're probably very thrilled to have it alive and before us today, and I just wanted to recognize you for all of your passion in terms of Alaska children.
Thank you very much, Senator Costello. I appreciate those kind remarks. We never doubted that we would be here if this is what it took. We also appreciate Senator McGuire's commitment to publicly waiving the bill out of committee or doing whatever she could to help get it out of the committee and onto the Senate floor. We know that you five are very supportive of it, and we thank you very much for your continued support, and onward to the Senate floor.
That's right. Thank you, Nicole. Yes, I echo Senator Costello's, and you've got nods going all around here. So I think you should be hired for any issue that's coming before this group. You're effective at it, so thank you. Okay, next I'm going to go to James Sedino. Mr. Sedino, who's in Old Harbor, Alaska. Are you there?
Yes, good afternoon, Chairman and committee members. I'm James Sedino with the Aleutic Tribe of Old Harbor. We believe that this bill is very important to our communities, our children. It is definitely streamlines the process of getting relatives involved in assuming care for our children and to adopt them, and even as relatives. And it will make the process simple for our tribal members to be able to get family members involved in this adoption process. And that includes non-native family members that are willing to adopt the children and provide a good and safe home. Our goal, and myself as a worker with the under the Indian Child Welfare Act, is to help our children have a safe home and be successful in the future. And I think that this bill streamlines that process, that we can get our families, our relatives of our children, take care of our responsibility. We are a strong believer that it takes a village to raise a child, and our village is willing to help and get that done. So I really appreciate your consideration for this bill, and we think it's something that would definitely help out in helping us, our tribes, and our partnership with the state moving forward. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Any questions for Mr. Sedino? Okay, next we'll go to Anna Frank, my apologies, Anna, of course, in Fairbanks.
Thank you, Chair. Chairman and committee members, my name is Anna Frank. I live in Fairbanks, and I'm the Dena'kanaga Board Second Chief and Native Elder. Dena'kanaga is the regional nonprofit organization that represents Native elders and youth of Interior Alaska, 42 villages, Tanana Chiefs region. We serve as the elder voice of the people for our region. The Dena'kanaga Board fully supports Bill 200. Please do what is right and make it easier for the family members to adopt their relatives by saying so in a phone call or conversation with a social worker any time a child is in state custody. By doing this, the relatives would no longer have to file paperwork that could be complicated because not everyone can get online with the court system by a certain date in order to be considered to adopt the child. Not only will this most likely save the state money, which is needed now, and most importantly, keep our children close to family, their community, and culture and tradition. I'm also a foster parent and also in the process of adopting a child. So thank you so very much.
Okay. That's okay. Are you still there, Ms. Frank?
Yes.
Okay, please continue.
That was it.
Okay, well, thank you. Questions for Anna Frank? Okay, thank you for your testimony and all of your patience today for hanging on. Elizabeth Medicine Crow with First Alaskans Institute out of Anchorage. You're next.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Chairman. My name is Elizabeth Medicine Crow, and I am calling in on behalf of First Alaskans Institute. I wanted to add my support, along with everyone else who's testified, about the critical importance of this bill. Earlier during the legislative session, I had the honor of sitting before this committee and sharing from First Alaskans Institute perspective over the past almost two decades of leadership development work and having contact with our Alaska Native youth and elders in our communities, that there's nothing more important to our people than our children. And this bill speaks directly to one of those kind of technical aspects that will help make sure that our kids get to stay at home. And I think that's what every Alaskan wants, not just Alaska Natives, but all Alaskans understand just the human nature element of keeping children with their families and in their communities. And one of the things that we've learned through our work, especially with our young people who have grown up either in the foster care system or in our villages or in the urban areas, is that that connection to who they are is what helps them be successful later in life. And so not only is this a technical issue around the child welfare system and improving its efficiencies and making it easier for families and communities to speak up and assert that they want to be able to be involved and care for their children when they're brought into the child welfare system, but it's also something that is very long-term in nature. The impact of this decision will have critical consequences on the health and wellness of these young people later on in their adult lives. So this is an investment in their success. So this bill is critically important to all of us. You've heard already some of the simple changes that will help make it much more effective, such as the one court, one family, and as our esteemed elder Anna Frank just shared, it will allow people who are in communication with the child welfare system from whatever angle they're coming into it from, as family members or tribal members, community members, being able to assert conversation or an email, this proxy statement, which would later then be formalized through the process. But it at least keeps the door open for children to be placed with their families and in their communities, which is, again, it's not just critical as a change to a process. It's critical for a change for their health and well-being. And so we stand beside all the others as we say, please pass this bill out of the committee, and we look forward to its passage in this special session. Ms. Trish Hella, thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Elizabeth. We appreciate your testimony. Okay, next we have Melanie Banky. Melanie, are you there in Nome?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Chairman McGuire. I just said thank you very much in my language, and I said that I wish I could testify entirely in my language. If it sounded confusing to you, I wanted you to purposely feel a little bit of how it can feel in the court system, which can be very intimidating and foreign and almost like a foreign language being spoken when Alaska Natives are engaged in the court system. I believe that this bill is a good step towards removing some of those barriers for allowing our people to accept responsibility for our own children. I previously testified in support of this bill and was questioned by a legislator about this only applying to Alaska Native children. And that's how it was previously written. My response then was, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. But I'm so pleased. I understand that this bill has been made even more perfect by extending the proxy provision to all Alaska children, not just Alaska Native children. I wish we didn't need laws to ensure that people do the right things, such as, you know, making it easier for relatives of children to adopt them as opposed to having them languish in a foster care system or end up in non-relative adoptive placements. Unfortunately, the truth is, if everything was in a perfect world, we wouldn't need ICWA. There wouldn't need to be laws like this one to ensure that people do the right thing in the first place. However, administrations change over, legislators change over, judges change over, social workers change over, and the closest thing to ensuring 100% that the right thing will be done is via legislation. And this legislation is needed to ensure that beyond my time, beyond your time, that people do the right thing by making it easier for family members to step up and accept responsibility for their children. So with that, I really just want to also thank you for ensuring that this bill is continuing on through the process, through the special session. I know you guys are all ready to go home and have a lot on your plate. So I really appreciate that you are giving this bill, which will truly make a difference in the lives of children and save the state money, this level of attention. And I look forward to hearing tomorrow that it is passed out of committee.
Thank you very much, Melanie. Great to hear your voice. Okay, next we'll go to Tracy McGarry, also in Nome.
Hi, thank you. My name is Tracy McGarry. I'm also in Nome. I work with Melanie at Kowarik. We work with 18 tribes on child in need of aid matters. And I'd first like to say that I completely agree with Grace and her testimony. We've seen the exact same things in this region that she's talking about. I fully support this bill because it's going to make it easier and faster for kids to be permanently placed with family members, which we all know is the most important and best place for them to be. Also, having one judge and one family will be less confusing for the families involved and will also give more time for social workers involved to actually work with the families instead of, you know, rehashing the case over and over in front of different judges in court. I would also like to thank you for your time and for listening to my testimony, and I hope that you please pass on this important bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tracy, for your testimony. Okay, next we'll go, and just for time considerations, we're wrapping up here, so we'll be done by 5 for those of you who have time considerations. Next we'll go to Marna Sanford with Tanana Chiefs out of Fairbanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Marna Sanford from Tanana Chiefs Conference, which for those of you that are not familiar is a nonprofit tribal health and social service consortium that represents 42 interior Alaskan tribes. I am thrilled with all the people who've already called in, and we would just echo all of the wonderful things that have already been said. We believe that this bill is integral to keeping Alaska children with their families and in their home communities, and we think that it should be an easy decision for all of you today. As a former public defender and public advocate, though, I would say that one of my favorite things about this bill is the one judge, one family concept, and I really think that both OCS and the Department of Law, they're unable to quantify the cost savings, are going to see a benefit to the workload of the people who are dealing with these cases day in and day out, not to mention how much easier it will be on the families to be able to focus on one courtroom when they're coming into a building that they don't necessarily want to be in the first place. So, again, thank you for your consideration, and we hope that you can pass this bill. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Okay, the last person I have besides, we'll wrap up with Nancy Mead, is Lawrence Amore Armour in Kluwak. Mr. Armour, are you there?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Lawrence Armour. I'm the tribal administrator for the Kluwak Cooperative Association in Kluwak, Alaska, and I fully support House Bill 200. I've seen too many of our tribal members adopted out of their families in our community that have family that were willing to take them in. And by making it easier for a family member to let the court know that they are willing to raise their relative, and by leaving it with one judge that has been following the case, I think that'll help people save money and, most importantly, keep our children close to family, their community, and culture. And it's just really difficult to see people in our small communities, you know, people that we love, struggling to keep their families whole. So please pass this bill. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Excellent. Thank you for your thoughtful testimony. Okay, and Nancy Mead, we'll wrap up with you.
Hi, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. I would be happy to answer any questions about the bill. In general, I did work with the Department of Law and Ms. Lawton to ensure that some of our concerns were addressed in the bill. Otherwise, I'll just take questions.
Excellent. So I just had the one question, which was whether or not, I assume there's been more thought. I know it was a priority of outgoing Chief Justice Dana Fabe and yours as well, but what movement there has been toward trying to specialize, get an area of family court specialization as opposed to the rolling docket for judges that don't always prefer those cases or necessarily have the extensive training and background in it.
To the chair, I think you must be referring to maybe having a dedicated family law
yes.
court in the court system. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, that is. That's actually not been one of the more recent priorities of the court system, and there's a few reasons for that.
Okay.
In our smaller court locations, we don't really have enough judges to do that. So, for example, if there's a one-judge location, that judge, you know, just kind of by definition has to handle everything that comes before it, both criminal and civil. And then the other thing is that in Anchorage, we almost already have that by default. Anchorage is the only court location where the judges specialize by either criminal law or civil law. Within the civil law arena, those judges handle at least 50%, maybe more of their caseload is domestic relations cases, meaning divorces, dissolutions, and child custodies, and another good 10 to 20% is child in need of aid cases. So, therefore, in Anchorage, those judges are almost always handling some sort of family law-related matter, including China cases, and the rest of their caseload, the civil judges, would be general civil litigation, just a construction litigation or a business partnership breakup or something. So, the judges in Anchorage do already do that, and in the smaller locations, it didn't seem to be very feasible, sort of logistically. Once you have peremptory challenges and whatnot, it wouldn't have worked very well in those places. And so, for now, that is not something that the court system is focusing on. But maybe to make you feel a little bit better about it, the judges, both in Anchorage and otherwise, do get regular training in family law type areas. They go to the National Judicial College, or we have speakers come up to talk about issues related to domestic relations and child in need of aid cases on a regular basis. Some of that is happening a little bit less in the last year or so due to budget constraints, but it's certainly a focus of the Supreme Court, and it's something that all the judges are trained in regularly.
I love it. Well, thank you for putting that on the record. And, yeah, I'm thinking back. If I think it was a year or two ago, it was probably five. That's generally how it works. But I just remember that we were talking about it when we were talking about therapeutic courts and the value of having people who are drawn to those areas, specialize in them, and become highly trained in them and innovative in their practices. So the training makes me feel better. There are many states that have specific family courts and specific laws that regard that. Maybe we'll get there one day, but I understand the concerns at this moment. So thank you. Any questions for Ms. Mead? Okay. Anyone else in the audience wishing to testify that I have overlooked? Anyone else online that I've overlooked? Okay, hearing and seeing none, then we'll go ahead and close public testimony for House Bill number 200. We're currently working with the presiding officer, President Meyer, to find out which day, whether it's tomorrow or Friday, that the bill will come back up, and we'll let all of you know. And I just wanted to introduce, in the very way back there, he's going to be horrified, but is Jesse Oney. He is here. He is going to be a junior at Diamond High School, and he is one of my pack of godchildren, and he's down here for the next few days guest paging and interning. So he's been helped us make copies today, helped Jesse, and I want to thank Jesse Logan, who is my chief of staff and not normally the committee aide, but we're in special session, and so that's what we're doing. Senator Machiki.
Just to clarify for those, I mean, obviously there are a lot of people that are concerned about it going to the floor, but
yes.
you're working with the president for floor scheduling, and then we'll back out our committee schedule from there.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. So it's our priority. I think it'll be the first thing to pass. That's what we're hoping, right? Okay, thank you, all of you, for your patience, for being here, to the director, especially, and to AFN. We know each of you have worked hard to contact us and get it through, and we look forward to its passage. Thank you to our Senate Secretary and clerk staff. Okay, with that, we're adjourned.